Canadian math.
Is that like chicken math?
Chicken math? What do you mean?
Oh, dude, it's a real thing. Google it. I didn't know that. My wife was making fun of me, and I'm like, what are you talking about? That's stupid. And she's like, no, for real. And it's a real thing.
Chicken math.
Yeah. Well, we own chickens.
Yes.
Apparently, there's a thing. You think, I want five chickens. And you think, you know what? I'll buy eight just in case some died to make sure I have five. And so you buy eight.
So here's.
You didn't buy five, you bought eight. That's chicken math. So
imagine if chickens try to do math in Canada.
And welcome to AFL Tonight, ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I am lucky to be joined not only by my regular co-host Jim Robinson, but also Adam Markowitz. Welcome to both of you gentlemen.
Hello!
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's where the show has devolved to over the years, huh? It just feels like years.
If I'm the regular host, does that make him the irregular host?
Okay.
It makes me the old host.
Yes.
The old regular host.
Now,
I'm just trying to, you know, get back in form.
Oh,
I guess I got to do this at the Arena Bowl, don't I?
Yeah, you got, because I don't think Jim's going to be coming to Arena Bowl.
Yeah, Jim's not going. So yeah.
I offered my services. I was declined.
What?
So does that mean we have to? We're going to start up a Fund Me page. Does it count if you get a negative? Do you have to pay them?
That would stink.
You mean nobody's going to fork up, you know, $500 to get Jim to the Arena Bowl?
Hey, if it's on. If it's going to be on Southwest, it wouldn't be cheaper than that.
Hey, if it's in Orlando, Jim, I expect your butt here.
He's already said he would. I think he already said he would. But if, okay. you know, we're talking about obviously Arena Bowl and stuff like that. We're at the end of the regular season, guys. This is hard to believe. I mean, we've already been through all these seasons, all the games this week through the season, 18 weeks, 16 weeks, whatever it is.
18 weeks, 16 games, 29th season in the books.
That's right. It's where has it gone? I mean, it's, you know, we've done 18 shows, our 18th show for AFL Tonight, and actually more than that, 19 with our preseason special and whatnot. But it's where did the season go, guys? I mean, it's, if you were to think about.
It finally got here.
Yeah.
the rest of this didn't count, right?
Right. Yes. It was all preseason. If you were to take. Or to think of one thing that stands out the most for each of you for this regular season, what would it be? Adam, I'll start with you.
God.
Good. God usually is around.
The first thing I wanted to say is just how bad Portland and Tampa were, but I guess I should put this the other direction and say just how good Arizona, Philly, and Orlando were.
Okay.
The lopsided nature of this league and the fact that it really did turn into three distinct tiers of teams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was really no drama at the end of the season, even though I shouldn't say there was no drama. There was plenty of drama with Orlando and Philly, but there was never, you know, how many upsets did we really have this year? How many times did one of the teams that weren't one of the best three teams in the league win a game against one of the three best teams in the league?
Not, well, one being Tampa.
Tampa, Arizona might be it.
That happened?
Yeah.
I'd have to really go back and look. And to Adam's point.
Well, Jacksonville beat both Orlando and Philly.
But that's Jacksonville. Jacksonville's up. Jacksonville's down. They've had the ability to do things, and they've fallen short this season.
Yeah, Jacksonville went 0 for the West this year, didn't they?
I think Florida went 0 for the West this year.
Tampa. Tampa.
Yeah, and Orlando got it.
And Jacksonville did.
That's true. Oh, yeah, out West. Yeah, that's true.
And Orlando swept L.A.
Yeah.
But, my quick answer would have been Joe Hills.
That's what I was going to say too. Yeah,
but to second what Adam was saying, week one really kind of was a prelude to what the season was, wouldn't you say? All the blowouts in week one, and you start looking at who the teams were that were the victors, and you have Orlando, and you have Philadelphia, and you have Arizona, and they carried throughout the season, and week one really was kind of a window into what the season would be.
And to show you just how far we've come from that, Jim, you remember how many points Orlando was favored by against Tampa in week one?
Was it 25?
It was like 2.5, 3.
It was 3 points.
They
were favored by a field goal. What do you think Orlando would have been favored by over Tampa now with Bimo playing quarterback?
It'd be 20.
And Boltis playing quarterback for Tampa.
If it was those two guys looking.
No, right now. If the two guys played tomorrow, what would the spread be?
It'd probably be 24.
Yeah, with Tampa having a better quarterback and Orlando having a worse quarterback. So that tells you how far that we've come just from, you know, these 70 miles separating me and Jim right now.
I think for me, what stands out, and I just happened to do the, you know, when we, Jim and you and I did the, the pick 'em for the entire year. For me, I think it was L.A. I mean, yes, it was I think L.A. surprised a lot more people than they thought that they would.
What's so fancy about a team that you know, went.
It's just it's a game under 500 still, but I mean, considering how bad that this franchise was in its entire history.
You know, it doesn't surprise me at all.
Somebody's got to win games.
Yeah, I thought they'd do some things. They put together a nice roster, a nice team. They were the preseason favorite amongst a lot of different people talking about the league as far as most improved team.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the team that kind of had the biggest question mark on where do they really kind of fall. And I admit, early in the season, I didn't see them coming out of the top two bottom two or three in the league, and they did. It's been a good season.
In fairness, they beat Tampa twice. They beat Portland three times.
Yeah. Well, you got
to
play.
I'm sorry. They beat Portland twice. They lost to Portland in the last game.
You got to play the games you have.
And they beat Cleveland.
They beat Cleveland twice.
Mm. To win a home game.
Mm-hmm.
Home.
Yeah.
Home.
Quote unquote.
Home game.
Air quotes. Home.
I forgot we're on radio. You can't see me do my finger thing with the air quotes. Oh,
yes. What about, real quickly, before we get to the games that were just of last week that are leading us into the postseason, one or the other, biggest positive or biggest disappointment of the year? I'll start with
Jacksonville.
You. Jacksonville.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. Go ahead. No, go ahead, Adam.
Okay, Jacksonville, biggest disappointment of the year. Not even remotely close. Now, they can fix that. They can fix that over the course of the next 2 weeks by doing the exact same thing they did last year.
Mm-hmm.
But if last year at 10-8 was considered a disappointment, what's 7-9 considered?
Well, I guess enough to get your head coach fired.
Yeah.
5-9 was enough to get your head coach fired. So, yeah.
I would say positive Joe Hills, negative.
The other seven guys on the field. No.
I'd say Tampa Bay's quarterback situation and their offense that they took many steps back from last season, and that, you know, not that they would have been top three in the league, but they didn't have a chance with the way the offense performed this year. And I thought they had some things to work with, and they proved me wrong.
They averaged 35.5 points a game.
Despicable.
Yeah, that's bad.
What, because Arizona almost doubled them in points?
Mm-hmm.
No, they averaged over 50 last year.
They also had Jason Boltis for most of the year last year. I guess they had Jason Boltis for most of the year this year.
Yeah, so that maybe it hits home a little bit more, but to me that's the biggest disappointment.
I think it's a good and a bad thing for me. I would go with the Randy Hibbert situation in Orlando, considering he was one of the leaders for MVP this year, goes down when he does. I mean, sure, Bimo is a competent backup quarterback. Just that, you know, he's a backup quarterback. It makes me wonder what Orlando could have done for the rest of the season if he hadn't gone down.
Now, okay, let me ask you two a question then. We talked about Randy Hibbert being a front runner for MVP and Offensive Player of the Year until he went down with his injury.
Right.
And you look, if you actually look at the games they won during that time span, Cardiac Kids. You plug in Bernard Morris, they're still the Cardiac Kids. They go on. Finish the season, have a great record. Why is the dialogue, the discussion different with Randy Hibbert versus Bernard Morris? Because essentially, they've taken their team to success.
Has Bernard Morris taken the team to success? He lost the two biggest games of the season. Had he won either one, we'd be having a different
narrative. Okay, that's what I'm trying to ask you guys. What is the difference?
He lost.
To be fair, Mark Lewis lost the biggest game for them of the year last week.
There's no guarantee they win that game. If he makes those extra points, Philly's still getting the ball.
But if you look at it, though, They won some ugly games with him, with Randy Hippert under center.
But the difference is they won those games.
They did. They did.
And it's not fair. You're right. It's not fair. But we judge quarterbacks in any form of football. We judge them just as much on yards and touchdowns as we do on wins and losses.
Yep.
Yards and touchdowns mean nothing if you can't win. Tommy Grady has never won a championship. Dan Rodabaugh has never won a championship.
How long did it take Grady to win his first postseason?
Playoff game, yeah.
Yeah.
2015. 2014, sorry.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, that's why I asked. I'd just generate that discussion and put that out there.
And the other thing is that BMO's got a history of not being good in big games.
We'd have to check, when we're going to talk about the games that are coming up. We'll have to see what his record is in the playoffs.
Well, I can tell you he's won one playoff game in his career. That's it. And I'm pretty sure the game that he won was the game where Capozzoli hit the 50-yard field goal with the gun.
Now, do you agree with what Jim and I were saying, Adam, about Hippert being up there as far as one of the best in contention for MVP?
No, he's
early,
not the MVP.
Early in the year, before he went down.
No, he never was. Yeah. Brandon Tompkins was 100% of the way on that team. Tompkins wins 8 or 9 games this year. I don't care. Who's
I disagree. I think he had it going.
But this is also Adam.
Once Hippert went down, it illuminated the greatness that Brandon Tompkins is this season. Hmm.
And Adam, this is also from you, which you've said many a time, where wide receivers are a dime a dozen.
Wide receivers are a dime a dozen. Playmakers aren't. And there's a difference between what Brandon Tompkins brings to that team as a receiver is not as important as what he brings to that game the team as a return man.
Mm.
He is just so explosive, and the number I would bet, I know the AFL doesn't keep this stat, but I would bet he led the league in yards after the catch.
Oh, yak yards, yeah.
The number of times that he took a little 3-yard curl route, made somebody miss, and took it for 30 yards was insane. Randy Hippard's numbers were – now, look, Randy Hippert was a significantly better quarterback than Bernard Morris was this year.
Yes.
Significantly.
Oh, yeah.
Not even close. I don't think anybody's going to argue that point. Randy Hippert was having a great season. He was not the MVP of this team. The MVP of this team, start to finish, was Brandon Tompkins.
Oh, no doubt. We know that now. But early in the season, before he went down, when we talk about the discussion of where people might fit – Randy Hippert was in that discussion.
Yeah, I don't know. Is a guy with 121 quarterback rating really in that discussion?
121?
I mean, it's good. It's worse than it was last year. Last year he was at 133, and he got benched for part of the season.
Did you see where everybody else is?
Didn't. What did Davila end up with?
Let me pull it up. I don't have it at my fingertips.
All right, let's see here. Davila ended up at 125.2, Rodabaugh 124.9, Tommy Grady 125.4.
Okay, so everybody else is 4 points higher.
True.
And how many games less?
Well, that doesn't matter with quarterback rating.
But I will say, Randy Hippert lost 2 games, and so did Bernard Morris. Bernard Morris lost to the Philadelphia Soul and the Arizona Rattlers. Randy Hippert lost to the Philadelphia Soul and the Jacksonville Sharks.
And in fairness to Hippert, the game that they lost to Jacksonville, the defense didn't come up with one stop.
No. But also, to Adam's point, when they beat Tampa Bay at home, the 42-40 win, that was the Tompkins show. If it wasn't for Tompkins in that game, they don't win that game. He completely dominated the Storm that day.
I think, I'm looking at it too. I think when Hippert went down, he had already thrown for 2,900 yards. He was just a shy list.
How many games did he miss?
What was it? He got hurt in the L.A. game, was it? Or the Cleveland game?
He sat the L.A. game, and then, so let's see.
He
played
games.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, you prorate his numbers. I mean, look, his last 2 games, he threw 8 touchdowns and 1 pick in the 2 games combined. Now, I wasn't here for the Jacksonville game where he got hurt, so I don't know when he got hurt in that game, in fairness.
At the time, he had thrown 4 touchdowns and a pick.
He got picked off. His first 2 games, he threw 12 touchdowns, no picks. After that, he was incredibly ordinary. 53 touchdowns and 8 picks.
Adam, he had a stretch of 2 games where he threw for 12 touchdowns, and that was versus LA and versus Cleveland.
Well, also at the time, he was on. Okay, if we're looking at a purely numerical, statistical standpoint, you got to give a nod to Tommy Grady on this, but. We don't because of his record, and he's the quarterback. At the time when Hippert went down, he was comparable and on plateau on the same level but had the record. So that's where we say he was just a, and that we're not saying he won it or he had the lead, but he's part of the discussion. You might end up dismissing it after doing what we're doing right now and you start going through some nuts and bolts. Mm-hmm. But I guess that's what I was just trying to say. So now we look at Bernard Morris. Why doesn't he get in there? And I know where you guys are going to go, but I guess I was just trying to generate some discussion on it.
Bernard Morris, you know, it's a lot of things are not fair in life because we do judge a book by its cover, right? And Bernard Morris's cover suggests that he's a quarterback that's never been able to win big games. Now, he threw 27 touchdowns this year and only threw 3 picks. That's pretty good. A 9-to-1 TD to INT ratio is pretty good, but how many drives did he make crucial mistakes in?
Oh, no doubt. I agree.
And by the way, the other reason that Randy Hippert is looked at as so much better than Bernard Morris, the Predators' defense was significantly better in the first half of the year than it was the second half of the year.
Stands on that, makes you think. I mean, it's...
It helps. I think the biggest difference is really the ability of a quarterback to sustain drives and have success with drives. And that's where Bernard Morris's downfall comes. He gets a lot of attribution for the ability to make plays with his legs, which he can do.
Yeah.
But I think that's overrated because when you look at Randy Hippard, he was able to make plays with his legs when needed as well. I think part of the problem is when you look at Bernard Morris, particularly this last game against Philadelphia Soul, there was just some poor mechanics with how he handled himself within the pocket and with his footwork and throwing off his the wrong foot and just kind of gunslinging it, just slinging the ball, flick of the wrist, trying to do it that way. And I think that's kind of the answer. I think it's evident to people as they watch and you see it. And I think that's part of the reason why he doesn't get talked about as well.
Okay, but let me put it this way. Okay. If I could tell you right now, you could have a healthy Randy Hippert or Arvell Nelson, who would you want?
Hip.
Easily, you'd want Hip.
Yeah.
Okay, would you rather have Bernard Morris? Would you rather have BMO or Arvell Nelson?
Nelson.
Yeah.
That's the point. That's the exact point.
Yeah. And Nelson, if you look, and you weren't here last week, Tim and I talked about this, if there was a Most Improved Player of the Year award, I think hands down it goes to Nelson this year. No doubt about it.
Sure.
First year he gets – a great majority of the starts, and from his first start to the end of the season, the progress he made mm-hmm. early in the season, he had struggles where he'd have 2 or 3 drives. By the end of the season, it became from struggles on drives to like mere mistakes that you might expect a starting quarterback to make and then overcome them. And outside of the Arizona game, that wasn't very good.
But Arizona does that to people.
That was a whole different story. But he progressed throughout the whole season and became a quarterback in the sense of a leader, understanding, decision making.
Yeah, he just wasn't a defensive back anymore.
Yeah, exactly. He wasn't getting jack reps. Now he's doing all his reps at quarterback, and you could see the progress. And he definitely went light years above and beyond where Bernard Morris is. Next season he plays, I expect him to continue the trend.
I was just about to ask that question. For either of you, do you expect Arvell Nelson to be the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Gladiators or elsewhere?
I expect it would be a starting quarterback.
Yeah, because I was about to say we have an expansion draft coming up. So
a starting quarterback is yet to be determined.
Right. Well, let's get a good discussion to start the show, guys. Let's get to the games from last week. Scheduling quirk, which we've seen before, but of course it just happened to be Arizona and Cleveland who had the bye this past week. You know, Arizona, of course, coming off of their huge shellacking versus Cleveland. And I think if you're talking about Arvell Nelson, wrong time to come off of go on a bye week, don't you think? I mean, you have a horrible game, you have a bye week.
Oh, it's perfect for Cleveland.
I would concur. Forget about it. Get away from it.
Okay. Yeah, don't get away from it.
So you think that
it's
more detrimental to Arizona?
No, I don't think it's detrimental to Arizona either.
I don't think it's to either team. I think for Cleveland, forget about last week against Arizona. Forget about it. Just move on. It's done with. And then for Arizona itself, I think Adam and I disagree a little bit on this.
Mm-hmm.
I, I think not being able to keep that momentum going, they really started like getting some stuff going, right? And then all of a sudden to stop, I can't talk to my players. I can't practice with my players. I can't talk to my players. Kevin Guy is a great coach. He's going to find some way to overcome that. But if you're asking me which team it benefits more, yeah. I think Cleveland.
Okay.
Now, let's remember something about Cleveland, too. They finally got to go home and spend a week there.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's right. I mean, yeah, they've been on the road for a while. You're right. Yeah.
Just that fact that they were able to get away from this. Being on the road can be galvanizing. And, Jim, you know this. You've been around teams, you know, for a long time. Going on the road can be galvanizing, but going on the road over and over and over again can be exhausting.
Yeah, it wears on you. Even if you get an interlude – where you might go road game, home game, road, still that can wear on you. So, yeah.
And Cleveland's on, what, 8 straight road games now?
This has got to be rejuvenating for them.
Yeah. So this was a perfectly placed bye week for Cleveland. I actually think it's a perfectly placed bye week for Arizona, too, because, look, you can't get hurt if you don't play.
Right. That's a very good point.
Valid point.
First game on Saturday was Tampa Bay traveling to the Jacksonville Sharks. No real playoff, nothing changed in the playoffs with these two teams meeting. But Jacksonville is able to come away with the win, and Bob Lanzi is 2-0 as a interim head coach.
I thought this game was the tale of two halves. The first half, at least for the Tampa Bay, they were able to move the ball and take advantage of some opportunities. In the second half, nothing. They weren't able to move the ball. They had, 4 of 5 drives stall. And that's not what you want to end the season with, and trying to move into the playoffs. You can't have that, and entirely disappointing. And Jacksonville's defense stepped up in the second half.
Yep, held Tampa Bay to 14 points. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they might have done that anyways, but that wasn't necessarily what I want to say about that is, yes, Tampa's offense struggled, but I want to credit that second half to the Jacksonville Sharks defense. They did a good job of getting pressure on the quarterback and blending and mixing up what they're doing on the back end to stifle the Storm offense, and they weren't able – the Storm offense wasn't able to respond. So credit should go to the Jacksonville Sharks defense for that second half performance.
I think the big thing too, obviously, that everybody was watching this game for multiple reasons was Joe Hill's Adam. He came into this game basically on pace to possibly tying the Damien Harrell's streak of 60 touchdowns in a single season. Didn't make it. But Joe Hill's nonetheless extended some other streaks that he's going to be bringing into next year. But what a year by Joe Hill's.
Is this – I mean, what is this, the third best year you think a wide receiver's ever had?
Well, we had this one. Obviously, there's Damien Harrell. Then there was also – everybody keeps forgetting about
– Rob Windsor's rookie year?
Jesse Schmidt, too.
Before, Jesse Schmidt, 2012. But, yeah, Rod Windsor's rookie year was phenomenal.
Yeah, that too, yes.
I would say this comes behind Rob Windsor's rookie year and behind Damien Harrell's year.
Okay,
I concur with that.
Yeah, that's pretty fair.
I would put a third above Jesse Schmidt's season, particularly Jesse Schmidt. If I recall, he did that in an 18-game season. So
correct.
Yeah.
By the way, Rod Windsor's season this year may have been the fourth best season a wide receiver's ever had. Nobody's talking about it because of what Joe Hill's did.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Yeah.
I mean, Windsor had 48 friggin' touchdowns this year. He scored 50 times if you include his rushing touchdowns.
That's true. Now,
on top of that, Joe Hill's hit 2,000 yards receiving and continued his consecutive games with a touchdown streak.
Yeah, that's going to be something to watch because I will admit, if he does continue the streak throughout, he needs 10 games, 10 games to tie it, 11 to break it in 2017. I would have always thought, because, you know, of all the things that T.T. Tolliver broke this year, if this is broken, that streak, that's one streak I never thought would have been broken.
Nah. Look, you're still one. I get it. It's really hard. It's a great accomplishment. I'm not taking anything away from it. But you're still a wide receiver scoring touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you think that your average quarterback throws 6 touchdowns in a game, right? No, throws probably 5 touchdowns in a game. You're one of 3 guys out there who can catch those passes.
I mean, you remember, you've had, was it, Rod Windsor, was it? Yeah, Windsor had a streak earlier this year too that was snapped. Same thing with Colin Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it's
incredibly impressive. But if you were to ask me which is more impressive, Joe Hill scoring in 78 straight games or T.T. Tolliver amassing 16,000 receiving yards and being the league's all time leader in almost every important category,
right? And doing it, getting 5,000 yards with two different teams
and starting as a defensive back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would tell you it's T.T. Tolliver, not Joe Hills.
Oh,
now, if Joe Hills gets to 150 games, we'll be having a different discussion.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm not disputing that. I'm just as far as a matter of record that I never thought would be broken. I mean, yes, records are meant to be broken. I get that. But no, I agree with you. I would still
especially in this score happy league.
I would still put T.T.'s accomplishments ahead.
But and the thing about T.T., though, T.T. is not going to, if T.T. plays two more years, right? Because God knows he might. I mean, why should he ever retire? But he may not retire as the all-time leader in any of these stats. He may get run down by people.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where Tiger Jones is at physically. He seems – I don't know if it's the nature of the wide receiver collection they have in Jacksonville this season or if he slowed down a bit.
I think things changed when Reggie Gray entered the picture.
Yeah, so it's really hard – from an outsider perspective to get a handle on that.
Yeah, but in fairness, look at what T.T. Tolliver's had around him too.
Yeah. Well,
somebody's got to catch the football.
Yeah, that leads to my point. Somebody's got to catch the football, but also the age at which he's doing it, and if you look at his numbers, he had a better year this year than he had last year.
Oh, yeah. No, Tolliver had a great year.
The only place he's down is in touchdowns, and that's in two fewer games with a crappy offense. I would wager that his touchdown percentage might actually be higher this year than it was last year.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not taking the thing away from. Yeah,
and so that's I guess some of the guys that are tracking him down. The legitimate contenders would be a Tiger Hill or Tiger Jones.
Tiger Hills.
Yeah, Tiger Jones, Rod Windsor. Well, at the pace Joe Hills is going, if he can put up monster numbers, he might get there quicker than later. Obviously, it's not going to be Donovan Morgan. He said he's hanging up his cleats.
Yeah, I want to talk about that too when we get to that game. But yeah,
so but yeah, there is a legitimate chance. If T.T. continues to hang on and he does, he could get past while he's still playing if he doesn't put up numbers like he did. Tiger's on his heels on a lot of these numbers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now the probably the biggest game one of the biggest games in the league this year, and it's not televised. Philadelphia Orlando, who was relegated to ESPN3, it didn't disappoint. It's just too bad that that there have been some modifications by the league. To be fair, it was additions to games in the playoffs, which is always a plus. But this game, I think it lived up, pretty well to its hype, Philadelphia and Orlando, and there were some really strange quirks that even I haven't seen in all the years that I've been following the Arena League. I think same thing with you guys, but
you brought it up. Go there first, Tim.
No, well, it was a let's see if I can find it here. Fourth quarter.
Fourth quarter.
Yeah, fourth quarter. About 9 minutes left. Brandon Tompkins scored a 40-yard touchdown from Bernard Morris. Tried to go for two because of, as it seems to be this case in the Arena League this year, that they're down by one because of a missed extra point. They go to do a two-point convert. It is intercepted in the end zone?
Yes.
Is it intercepted or does it go off the nets? It's intercepted. Intercepted in the end zone.
Yeah, it was intercepted.
And then a illegal forward pass by the Philadelphia interceptor. I can't remember who it was. And the ball goes out of bounds. And a safety is called. And
yes.
Everybody's wondering. It's like, well, does this actually exist? It exists. The rule actually exists. That an illegal forward pass in the end zone would be a safety.
Yeah. Kind of crazy. Something you rarely see. I don't know if we've seen it. I haven't personally seen it before.
We've seen some strange things. Adam, I'm sure you could come up with some of the strange things that you've seen over the years.
I'm not even so sure if it's the strangest thing that's happened in an Orlando game this year.
I might concur with Adam on that.
Remember the game that ended in L.A. on the safety?
Yeah, you're right. Speaking of, another
that
safety.
That may have been the strangest thing that happened in an Orlando game this year.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that one, too.
You know.
I mean, the thing you think about is Orlando went for 2 points at the 9-minute mark because they were down by two because they missed extra points. That to me seemed too early in the game to start doing this. Take your extra point, stay within one, keep going. You're going to have time. You always want to put points on the board. You never want to take them away. And when you get that final chance, then you go for it. At least that's how I think about it. And they were kind of, I don't know, saved by the bell.
You know, something you need to remember too, Jim, and I don't recall this for sure, but who was holding for the Predators?
Oh, you know what? I don't recall. I have to go back and look.
Because I think when Hip got hurt, that the guy who was the backup quarterback ended up doing a lot of the holding. And Danny Southwick, if I remember right, was in his first week with the team last week. Now, I don't know whether he did the holding
Danny's
or not.
Danny's been there for a couple weeks.
Yeah, he has? Okay. Now, yeah. I don't know whether he's been doing the holding or not, but that may have had a little something to do with it. I don't know. I'm just trying to get in the head of Rob Keith.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I appreciate that. No, he's a Danny's a pretty solid holder.
Well, you could be pretty solid, but if you haven't gotten the reps in.
Well, he's been there for a couple weeks, so he should have gotten the reps in.
That's fair enough. By the way, I'm also going to play devil's advocate about this. Yeah. You know, I'm generally with you. You put points on the board when you can, but when you're playing against a team like Philly with that type of time left in the game.
Yeah, but 9 minutes out, and if you kick the extra point, you're only down by one. You 9 minutes left in the game.
No, completely understood. But the logic that I'm using here is you figure you're going to have to stretch this game out for at least two more touchdowns, right?
Yeah.
With 9 minutes to go against an offense like that. And that's exactly what happened. They stretched it out two more touchdowns. If you fail on your two-point conversion, you're down two. Okay, so you figure Philly's got to score twice more, right? So Philly's got to score twice more. I'm still within two touchdowns at that point. But if I get the two-point conversion, I could be in a spot where if they screw up, I can win the game without having to do anything else.
Yeah, but see, at that point in the game, they had already – Freevert had already missed three extra points himself.
All the more reason to go for two there. Because then if he misses another extra point, I'm still within eight.
No, all the more reason
to
go
for by the one. Way, which he did.
Get the points and then let them make their mistake and you capitalize on it.
In premise, I don't totally disagree with you. I'm really playing devil's advocate.
No, it's good. It's good. It's good.
I wasn't out the game. I didn't watch the game, so.
But looking back at the game, as you're talking about, there were some mistakes. Mainly, a lot of them. As I said that the outcome was we can say it was special teams that cost Orlando the game. I mean, sure, Freevert missed the kicks that he did. I mean, he missed his next extra point on the next Philadelphia touchdown, but.
Tim, I totally disagree with you. For a game I didn't watch, right? A game I didn't watch. But here's what I do know about this game. On fourth down, Philly scored the touchdown when they had to.
Yeah, and on fourth down, Orlando or Bernard Morris
screwed up.
Keith was 1 of 3, where Philly was 3 of 3. And that's the ability to sustain drives like we were talking about earlier in the show.
Right.
And plus, I talked to Adam before the show, and I know sometimes Coach Keith gets upset at him, so I told him I'd take the heat this show.
with the Philadelphia win that gave them the regular season conference division title, that's what I've been calling it, by the way, Adam, and it put Philadelphia as the number one seed in that conference. And
American conference.
Yeah, and then it gave the Arizona Rattlers the home field advantage through Arena Bowl.
And I've already booked my plane tickets.
So it's, I mean, do you really think it changes much? I mean, you brought up a huge stat, by the way.
It changes everything.
Oh, I know. Well, that's just what I'll say, because you brought up a huge stat when it came to Arizona and their wins at home.
Yeah. They've lost once to a team in the existing league since 2005. Think about that for a second. Yeah, you're right. At home. I'm sorry. Yeah, at home. They've lost once, that being the Arena Bowl.
I was about to say, versus Jacksonville.
There's no quarterback in this league that has ever gone to Arizona and won. Not a single quarterback in this league.
Single active. You're correct.
That's huge.
And you want to know why I booked my plane tickets already.
And that's why we play the game.
I get it. Look, I would get what I deserved. I'm flying Southwest, though. I could change my tickets if I have to. I didn't book anything else. I just booked my airfare. But, I mean, eventually it's going to happen, right? Right. But the way Arizona's playing, does it look like it?
And I'll say this to Tim. That's why the regular season matters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the regular season does matter.
But you know what? I can also say that's why the regular season didn't matter for five teams.
Now, late game, Monday, which I think probably was a very – I think this game was originally scheduled to be on CBS Sports Network and on Univision. But the LA-Portland game ended up being a pretty good game.
Apparently, if you got to see it, if you live in Portland.
Did anyone watch it?
It wasn't televised.
Was anyone there?
If a tree falls in the woods and you're not there to see it, did it fall?
Well, that's what they that's San Jose televised games. But no, the game was only on the radio.
I didn't get to watch the game.
Well, technical difficulties in Portland.
It seems this is a game that LA Kiss should have won. Mm-hmm. They won the turnover battle, and it just seems Portland won the game of possessions and timing, and they came out on top.
And let's face it, Portland wanted to win that game. You never say a team doesn't want to win a game, but you know it's kind of like when Orlando was celebrating losing by 17. I mean, what? It's hard to get up for that game, you know, knowing that 5 days later or whatever it is, you're playing your first playoff game at home in team history. Well, your first playoff game too, but your first playoff game and your first playoff game at home, and you know, you've got a game that means something versus a game that literally means zero.
Yeah, because they already had the tiebreaker over Cleveland already. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it was kind of. I mean, what are you playing for if you're LA?
Yeah, I wish I could talk more about the game. It seemed like it was a good game, a little bit back and forth, and there was a stall in the third period where it was turnover and downs, fumble, interception, turnover and downs. But it seemed back and forth, and it seems this is the game in which, once again, not being able to watch it, just reading the play-by-play, Ron James was able to capitalize on the clock in possession.
Oh, it ended up perfectly, scoring a touchdown with 7 seconds left.
I mean, LA had the ball last in each half, but 12 seconds and 6 seconds, if I remember correctly. And that's not really quite enough time to do much.
Yeah. Now, what I wanted to ask both of you is, and I know Jim and I have been talking about this for a couple of weeks here, Adam. Pete Thomas did start. And that's what I think should happen. I think Pete Thomas should be their starter throughout the play.
Well, Nathan Stanley was listed as inactive on the injury report.
Oh, was he? Okay. Who the
Tim and I digress on this.
Who'd have backed up? Well, no, I think Pete Thomas, if there was, I think he should be considered a rookie of the year, at least in the same sentence, in my opinion. Look what he's done.
Even the rookies this year, he's in the conversation, but this is similar to what we talked about with Randy Hippard.
Right.
He's a part of the conversation, and once we start getting into the nuts and bolts of it, to be quite honest, I would put I get the McCray brothers confused in Orlando. I forget which one is the offensive lineman, which one's the fullback. I get them mixed up. But I think the one that's the offensive lineman, I would put him ahead of Pete Thomas on Rookie of the Year ballot.
Adam, anything?
I don't remember what I put on my Rookie of the Year ballot.
Well, no, I mean, as far as what – is it fair to call to consider Pete Thomas a Rookie of the Year, or is he only in the conversation?
I didn't. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
I have a hard time talking about a guy who started the year as a backup. Did he even start the year as a backup quarterback?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, okay. Started the year as a backup quarterback and played what, 5 games? This isn't like when Greg Reed won the award last year when he started like 6 games and had what, 7 or 8 picks. I mean, it's not like Pete Thomas was dominant. Did Pete Thomas even win a game?
Well, he played in 10 games this year.
Yeah, but how many of those games did he really play from start to finish?
I think he actually won more games as a starter.
Did he?
I think he did, yeah. But I we'd have to go – you know what? Let me pull it up.
Did he beat anybody? Well, I mean, did he beat anybody of any note, or did he just keep beating up on, you know, Portland and all that crap?
Well, that's what I'm about to look up. I'll tell you in a second. I still think – see, this is where Tim and I disagree. I think they should go with Nathan Stanley if he's ready to go over Pete Thomas. Whereas – and I get what Tim's saying, but –
he beat Portland and he beat Tampa. That's all he did this year. They lost to Arizona when he started twice. They lost to Orlando. They lost to Philly. They beat Tampa. They lost to Arizona. They lost to Jacksonville. They lost to Portland. He went 2-6. Or 2-1, 2-3, 4-5, 6. Yeah, he went 2-6 as a starter.
Tim, you asked the question.
No, I know. I'm just going back because I think he played just by looking. I guess I understand stats can be misleading. You know, it's sometimes it's always wins and losses. But
I mean, look, 15. Here's all you need to know about Pete Thomas. Against Arizona, the second time he went 15 of 36 for 5 touchdowns and 4 picks. That's bad. In fairness, he had some significantly better games than that, but. Yeah.
And he did have some better games than Nathan Stanley. I still think if you're the LA Kiss and Nathan Stanley's ready to go come this playoff game, Nathan Stanley's the guy you ride with.
Nathan Stanley beat Cleveland twice already this year. He played damn well in that second game.
What have we seen on the practice report? The practice reports.
Nathan Stanley's been inactive so far this week.
Interesting. So interesting.
But I will say this in fairness to Pete. Pete came in as a rookie and he showed some things that you can work with. And, you know, LA's got to make a decision. And now that I say that, I take pause. With Washington coming in, it's yet to be determined how the expansion process will work. Typically, you've usually had teams able to re-sign, mm-hmm. and then the expansion process goes, and teams protect, and then leave certain players available. And once you lose a guy, you get to protect another guy. I would assume that's how this would proceed. So LA has an interesting decision on how they want to proceed with Pete Thomas on bringing him back, because is he a guy you want to go into free agency and not have go through the draft and then try and bring him back after that?
They don't have that option because he's a rookie, so he's on a rookie deal, so he's going to be automatically extended.
You're right. So the problem there for the LA now is
Do you protect him?
Good point.
Think the answer to that is no, you don't protect him.
It's funny, if you look at the stats between Nathan Stanley and Pete Thomas, they're almost identical. Almost identical.
Is Nathan Stanley on – I assume Nathan Stanley's on a multi-year deal, right?
Give me a second, I'll tell you.
Yeah,
I assume that he is.
Keep the conversation going. The two big stats were the difference between Stanley and Thomas. Stanley has more interceptions, mm-hmm. particularly more.
Yeah, four more.
But Thomas has a lower completion percentage.
But he's also done what he's able to do. He had two more touchdowns than Nathan Stanley did, and he did it with less attempts and less completions.
So this reminds me.
I still don't like that completion percentage, man. That's worse than Bernard Morris's completion percentage.
2 points?
And I don't like his.
2.1 points.
That's 2% in this league is a big amount. You know, let's not kid ourselves. But you know what this reminds me of little bit?
What's that?
When the Orlando Predators couldn't make up their mind between Pat O'Hara and Scott Sendenfelter. Neither one of them were very good, but one of them was better at screwing up games than the other one, and the other one was better at not losing games than the other one, but had significantly less talent. Scott Sendenfelter clearly had more talent than Pat O'Hara. But Scott Sendenfelter was clearly more likely to screw up the game because he didn't understand the nuances of the AFL.
Right.
So that's kind of what this reminds me of. You know, when you have two quarterbacks, you have none. LA has two quarterbacks and has none. But in fairness, we've seen Nathan Stanley make some – I mean, Nathan Stanley has made some big league throws. I don't remember Pete Thomas making a big league throw. That doesn't mean he hasn't. I just don't remember seeing. But I've seen with my own two eyes Nathan Stanley make some real big league throws.
And I think in fairness to Nathan Stanley – that offensive line to start the season for the LA Kiss was not good. It got better. I'm not saying it was a great line, but it got better as the season progressed. And for a big part of that, Thomas was a beneficiary of the better offensive line play. And to answer your question, Nathan Stanley is on a 2-year deal.
Yeah, he almost had to be with the way LA made the pomp and circumstance out of him. Look, he's your franchise right now.
Yeah,
he's Thomas, the face of your franchise, because who are you getting that's better than that?
Thomas started 9 games, by the way. I just verified.
So if you lose Pete Thomas, you know, okay, big whoop, you lose Pete Thomas. He's your backup quarterback.
Good thing is, but I think the thing that I was the most impressed the most, and that's why I had him as high as I did if he was even considered for a rookie of the year, he was a pure – when's the last time, Adam and Jim, that we've had a quarterback come into this league and be able to understand it as well as he did to have never played the indoor game?
Happens all the time.
Name me the last quarterback, because there is a conundrum really in this league if you don't have a backup quarterback. And same thing with all football.
We can't
spell
quarterbacks in this league.
I mean, look at the crap that the CFL is going through right now with quarterbacks.
I mean, I give you one name, Randy Hippard.
Okay.
You know, I mean, Dan Rodabaugh.
Dan might be a better one because Randy actually had some indoor experience coming up through the PIF. Right.
Good point. Okay. Good point with Dan Radabaugh. Very good point with Dan Radabaugh. Yeah.
You know, I mean,
he was DeVille a raw rookie when he came to play for Dallas.
DeVille played in the deuce.
Yeah.
I mean, I get. Did Radabaugh play in the deuce? I don't remember.
No. I think Radabaugh was a raw rookie.
Okay. Well, and the answer to that is Dan Radabaugh. Okay. I mean, because Tommy Grady played in the deuce.
Deets played in the deuce. Gryson sat the bench for a while before he became a starter.
Chris Leak, had some moments.
Really? You're going to throw Chris Leak into that one?
You're going to throw Pete Thomas into this?
I think Pete Thomas was a hell of better than Chris Leak.
I think Chris Leak actually could. I think if Chris Leak actually wanted to keep playing football, he would have made it in this league.
He was at least a step ahead of Pete Thomas. I'll say that.
Okay.
I'll concur with that.
See, you get Tim. You got to remember something here. Chris Leak was. I get it. Now, college recruiting doesn't necessarily mean anything, and I'm just gonna use one name. It's gonna make Jim cringe, Jevin Snead.
Jevin Snead. No, Jevin Snead. Okay, I'll go ahead, Adam. I'll wait.
Okay, but I'll bring this back to Jevin Snead in a second. But Chris Leak, when he was recruited to Florida, granted, he ended up being Tim Tebow's jock holder.
No, he found out Tim Tebow signed and then he transferred to Texas. And then he found out that Colt McCoy signed at Texas and he transferred again and went to Ole Miss.
Chris Leak?
No, not Chris Leak. I thought you were talking about Jevin Snead.
No, Chris Leak. When Chris Leak was recruited as a top-notch quarterback.
Yes.
Now, he ended up being the guy who held the clipboard for Tim Tebow at times over the course of the end of his career. But this is a kid with a lot of talent. Jevin Snead was an incredibly highly recruited quarterback who ended up just never – who should have turned pro after his junior year, didn't, blew it out his ass in his senior year, never got drafted, never made it through camp, got signed by the Storm, was brought in to be their starting quarterback, and got cut by Markham after an exhibition against Orlando because he was awful.
He wasn't brought in to be the starting quarterback. Let's get that straight.
Well, okay. But he ended up being poised.
Couldn't take a snap from center.
He would have been the starting quarterback in 1 week in the future for the Tampa Bay Storm.
Well, that season
had such a god awful first showing.
Yeah, the way that season went, yes. But he couldn't take a snap from center. His whole career, he had taken everything from five step, seven step back in the shotgun, and he literally could not take a snap from under center.
That's why it's amazing what Shane Austin can do. Shane Austin never took a snap under center at Hawaii.
No.
By the way, did Shane Austin ever play it down in the indoor game? I don't think so. I think he came straight. I think Selesky found him.
There you go.
I think he played indoor.
If he did, it sure as hell wasn't for long.
Let me delge.
Oh, you know what? He played with Pittsburgh. I think his first experience
Everett
was
Raptors. Football. Everett Raptors.
Oh, he did play. All right, fine. Besides, none of that counts anyway.
But so I think you made your point, Tim.
Yeah.
Pete Thomas has acquitted himself well for his first year.
Yes.
And I would concur. I don't know if he listens to this, and he's probably saying, who's this Jim Robinson guy bashing me? I'm not bashing him.
I'm bashing him.
I think he acquitted himself quite well. There's room to grow. It's a learning curve, and he's taking it taking it in, and he's getting better. It's just he's not a starting quarterback yet.
How do you think that he would thrive if it wasn't for Omar Smith? You know, under Omar Smith, how would it be if he was under, let's say, a Dan Radabaugh? Or
he never would have played.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
no, sorry. Like under a Dozell or a.
We never would have played. We never would have found out about it.
No. But how do you think that he, how much better of a quarterback he can become under a head coach that has had.
You're talking about a guy who was a middling at best college quarterback. Again, that doesn't mean anything. Plenty of guys were middling college quarterbacks who turned out to be great professional quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. But you know, Nick Davila was at best a middling college quarterback at Cincinnati. He couldn't hang on to his job at Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And now look, he's one of the five best quarterbacks in NFL history and all that.
Yeah.
But I mean, let's not get excited about a guy who's never thrown seven touchdown passes in a game. He's won two games. He's beaten Tampa and Portland. Whoop-de-doo.
Fair.
So let's not get overly excited. Maybe he's going to be the second coming, and if Pete Thomas is listening to this, hope you do, kid. Really hope you do. The league needs kids like this.
Hey,
we'd never know.
He may have not thrown seven in a game, but he has thrown six three times.
Great. Six. Whoop-de-doo. Average. Davila does that in a half. If he's going to win, if he's going to go on the road and beat you know, Nick Davila in 2 weeks, if he gets past Cleveland this week, he's going to have to throw nine touchdowns.
Yeah.
Good luck with that kid.
Yeah.
Against the best defense in the league.
Now, yeah. But I'd say there were many things and many different subjects to talk about when in the last week of the regular season. We're heading into the postseason now. It's, you know, road to Arena Bowl 29. But, you know, besides the games themselves, and we talked about a few of them already, guys, is that there were a ton of milestones. And I know, I think you had a list, Adam, that you had forwarded to us, I think that we got from Tom Goodhines in the league office.
We got that from Adam Markowitz.
Yep, okay.
Not Tom Goodhines.
Okay, well, but... anyways,
I'm taking credit for where I take my credit from. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, but there was more than just the T.T. Tolliver stuff, more than just the you know, let's go over a few of them here, guys, and
yeah, it's kind of encapsulized the 2016 season and in no particular order.
No particular.
Because that's the first line of this email. Yeah. No particular order.
No particular order.
Some milestones hit upon this season.
I mean, you got to admit, guys, the T.T. Tolliver hitting the trifecta this year.
Hitting any of those.
That was stunning. I mean, just dumb. You know, it wasn't just necessarily just hitting the three, but he did two in 2 weeks. And then he did one, was it 2 weeks later?
Yeah.
2 games later, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that in itself, if there was a highlight reel for the 2016 season, that would be one of, if not the one for the year. It's fair to say.
Yeah, I think you put TT and you have TTA, TTB, C, and D. You got
There's too many just single letters there.
There's a bunch of different things, you know, for him, and he's not the only player this season. But you know, whether it's all time marks and receptions, receiving yards, all purpose yards, 5,000 yards with two different teams, 100 touchdowns, second player with 100 touchdowns. Times with two different teams. Was it? He's the fourth player to break the 300 touchdown mark, he ranks fourth right now. And he's closing in on number three all time. So yeah, I mean, if I know you asked the question at the beginning of the show, Tim, about if we had to talk about this season and one thing, and I said Joe Hills.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think Joe Hills is still there, but now that we're talking, having this discussion. I think T.T. Tolliver deserves some credit.
Oh yeah, for sure. Now, what about we got quarterbacks? We got Nick Davila and Tommy Grady, eighth and ninth quarterbacks in league history to reach 30,000 yards. Good milestone, obviously. 30K is a nice round number.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of like one of the benchmarks for the NFL Hall of Fame. Right now, I'm not saying that 30,000 yards in the AFL is the same as 30,000 yards in the NFL. It's not. But, you know, it's kind of one of those benchmark numbers that puts you in the elite category. Now, granted, some of the people in this, quote, elite category did so by hanging around for far too long. I'm looking at you, John Kaleo. But, you know, the fact of the matter with Davila is he's the first guy who did it. He did it at the age of 30. Nobody else did it before the age of 32.
Right.
Now, granted, he's had some help because he's had some extra games to play over the course of his career with the 18-game seasons, but still not that many more games. His if you take his career trajectory and put it on like Aaron Garcia's quantity of games, you're talking about a guy who's going to throw for 100,000 yards.
Yep. And it's just the rate he's going, he's just going to easily.
Oh, he is going to obliterate. Yeah. If he – imagine this. He's 30. In this league, you could stick around for a good long while. And I mean, there's at some point Father Time catches up with you. But if he plays eight more seasons and stays healthy, okay, if he averages 4,000 yards a year, right, for eight more seasons, he's going to pass Aaron Garcia.
And by touchdowns, too, if you average 100 touchdowns a year.
We talked about that last week. Remember the question we got about the connection of Rod Windsor and Davila and how long do you think they can go? And, you know, that's totally possible. As long as he's willing, he can do it.
Do we think? I mean, I don't know. I haven't looked it up. Do you think there probably isn't a quarterback to wide receiver combination who's had more receptions, yards, and touchdowns than those two in league history? Probably has never happened.
You're probably right. Have to definitely look it up off the top of my head.
Yeah, for a wide receiver core. Yeah,
because virtually every single one of Windsor's touchdowns came from Davila, right?
Yep. And so you probably have to take that and compare that to Bonner and some of his receivers.
Well, Mike Perez.
But we already know
Mike Perez and Eddie Brown.
That's maybe the only one. And the reason I say that is because we already know that Windsor became the all-time leader in Rattlers receiving yards and touchdowns this year.
Yeah. No. True. Good point. Yeah. That's.
But Eddie Brown might be the answer.
I think Eddie Brown had too many different quarterbacks.
Yeah,
but he had Pulaski. Mike Pulaski
too. You're right. Very good point.
So I would bet that I mean, without looking it up, and just kind
of that's probably the highest scoring tandem in league history.
Yeah,
and it may not even be remotely close.
Yeah,
I mean, I would bet that Tiger Jones and Dan Rodabaugh is right
that's
up there
second.
Too.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. and those two are nowhere near Windsor and Davila.
Yeah,
can't even be close.
Talk about touchdowns and by quarterbacks. Rattaball this year joined the 600 TD club. Davila reached 700, and Grady did the same thing just this past week.
It took him 10 scores. Or I don't know, what did he throw for this week? Rattaball had 10 scores. Not Grady. My bad. Never mind. He got there this week.
Yeah, he got there.
Mazel tov. You know, don't you feel bad for Tommy Grady? Like he's always second best to Davila.
It seems like he's the runner up, the bridesmaid, the what do you call it? Miss Congeniality. It's
loser, man. First loser.
You know, if his team, if he had his stats stay the same, but his team was, say they finished not even where Arizona or Philly finished, but say they finished 11-5, you'd be talking about him in that MVP discussion.
I don't know. MVP to me seems like it became a one horse race right at the end of the year with the Arizona dominated people.
I understand that, but I'm saying in the grand scope, we're talking macro here, and we're not going down. If
we're putting together a list of finalists, you're telling me he's on the list at that point.
Okay, at what record would he become a finalist on that list?
I don't think there is one. And I don't even think it's
I think there is.
Well, the team has to be over 500.
I think more than 500.
No. I'm saying at least, because you've never, in many professional league, you've never seen a guy get MVP and the team has been woefully
Alex Rodriguez?
Woefully under 500.
Alex Rodriguez, Texas Rangers.
It happens, but... But that's what I'm saying. The knock against Grady.
Well, that year wasn't A-Rod. It wasn't A-Rod who won it. It was some juice.
is his record, and the knock against Hills this year on some of that in some respect the same thing is the record. At what point when you start looking as these wins tick up, do they join that conversation?
Right. No. But you just said the operative word. What did they join the conversation? In my eyes, he's never been the MVP of his team.
No, I get that. But if you look at his numbers.
Well, I get it, but Joe Hill's numbers are more impressive.
They are.
And what's so funny is Joe Hill's numbers and you don't care what the record are because
argument you're saying that they get split on that team in a certain respect. I agree with what you said. Joe Hill's numbers they take precedent. But if you look at Tommy Grady's numbers and you look at Davila and Rattaball's numbers this year, what's the big distinction? Touchdown passes, but the really big distinction is wins and losses.
Yeah. See, it's not just that, though. To me, it's not just
what
that.
What else is it?
It's 66 points per game for Arizona. It's 56 points game in and game out every single week for Arizona.
It leads directly to wins and losses.
Right, but when they needed to come up with wins and the guy who made the plays was Nick Davila.
Well, obviously, if they won more games, that aspect which you're talking about flips the script and it changes. Because
but how many times did Jacksonville win the
games? That has to happen.
Right, but go back and look at Jacksonville's wins this year, and I'm just going to take the Orlando game for an example, and it's an extreme example. And I get
this isn't real.
No, I know, but if they're winning
real
those
life?
Games, but if they're winning those games, how many of those games are they winning because of Joe Hill's, not because of Tommy Grady?
No, I agree.
That eight touchdown game that Joe Hill's had, Tommy Grady did not play a good game that night.
No,
now they scored on every possession, but the number of balls that Joe Hill's went and just got, okay, that were not great balls, was insane. That was greatest performance that I've seen in a long time in this league.
You have to go way back when. But no, I totally agree. But that makes my point. If you're looking at the quarterbacks, so and when I say that makes my point, you weren't here for some of our discussions with Tim. I was building merit cases for Tompkins for MVP. Mm. And that makes my point. If you have DeVille and Radebaugh in this class here, and their numbers are a lot alike, and their records are a lot alike. And personally, I think you both might agree with me. DeVille gets the edge in this case this year, this season. And not only that, one thing people are overlooking, and I think you guys brought this up, they may have some of the greatest 16 game seasons for a quarterback in AFL history.
Yeah,
but if it wasn't for Grady's win loss record, you start looking at his touchdown interception ratio, his completion percentage, his yards, he's on par with these guys, but he just gets dismissed. Well, Joe Hill's his receiver, and
yeah,
he's
but you know,
5-11.
But this goes back to the same argument we had at the beginning about Bimo. It's a lot of this has to do with history too. Radebaugh has been to two Arena Bowls, right? Radebaugh has been on the verge of several championships, and he's never been able to beat Nick DeVille. But Grady hasn't been able to beat anybody.
But when we talk about a single season award, that stuff shouldn't enter the discussion.
It shouldn't, but it does. Because how many times have we seen Grady in his career? This is another example where his teams have been not good and he's put up ridiculous numbers.
Yeah.
The season he threw 140 whatever touchdown passes it was. Utah wasn't that good that year.
Utah, Oklahoma City.
Yeah, Jacksonville. Yeah. Here we go. He's had one awesome regular season in his career in terms of one loss record. He has I think he has a losing record as a starting quarterback. and I'm sorry, I know it's not fair when you're looking at encapsulating one season, 16 games, what did he do in that? But it's hard to set that aside. It's hard to not be biased about that because we're talking about a man who's never won.
Right.
So in order for him to have joined that discussion this year, he'd probably have to be 14-2.
He would have had to have been 14-2, he would have had to have been 14-2, and he, in my opinion, he would have had to made Joe Hill's, not the other way around.
Mm.
I can't if they had gone 16-0 and Joe Hill's had 58 touchdowns and Tommy Grady threw 101 touchdowns or whatever it was, I would still tell you Joe Hill's deserves to be MVP over Tommy Grady.
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
But if that's the case, I don't care whether you're a finalist or not, because you're not gonna win. In the words of Donald Trump, he's a loser.
Let's move on.
Says the good Jew.
Let's move on here. Tiger Jones moved into third all-time in receptions and moved into third into receiving yards. Rod Windsor, as you mentioned before, Adam, became the all-time leading receiver in Arizona Rattlers history.
And that's saying something, considering how many awesome players they've had in league history. Yeah.
And I remember... I remember when we were talking about this one here, Quentin Sims scores a 300,000th point in AFL history. You and I were on the road back from Tampa.
No, we stayed there. We were still in Tampa.
Were we still in Tampa at that time?
We were still in Tampa.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
We stayed. Remember, we sat there and waited.
Yeah. Joe Hills, as we talked about, threatens Damien Harrell's all-time touchdown mark. How would you rate that? I know we talked about it a little bit before, but how would you rate his run?
A+.
Because we've had others before, but not in 16 games.
I still don't think he's Rod Windsor, but he's the second best receiver this league has. And I could listen to arguments for him being the best receiver in this league.
I think he's the best receiver in the league this year.
It's hard to argue that.
It's hard.
You know, I mean, nobody put up stats like that, and nobody even came close. If you still ask me who I'd rather have to go up for the one ball at the end of the game, I'd rather have Rod Windsor.
I might concur with that.
Yeah.
Because now it comes down to one game, right?
No, we're not talking about one game. We're talking about one catch.
Okay, but yeah, one catch, one game, one drive, one whatever it is, in one a case of one, I'd rather have Rob Windsor, who I think is at the point that I can put him in the discussion with the best receivers in league history. I know we talked about this the last time I was on.
And to be fair, I would concur that Rad Windsor would be that one, but I don't think Joe's that far behind.
No, he's not. Absolutely not. Joe Hill's is phenomenal.
Both of them have their strengths, and you got to admit, Joe Hill's hasn't been able to do what he's doing with multiple quarterbacks. But luckily Rod Windsor's been able to do it with one.
And then we get back to the discussion of, is it fair for me to say that Nick Davila should be that much better than Rob Windsor, or should Rob Windsor be the MVP of that team? And I think the answer is it's still Davila, because Davila's proven he could do it without Windsor in the past.
Yeah, I agree. Yep. I'll agree with you on that one. Speaking of Nick Davila, I think he did finish. He finished with the second most touchdowns in a 16-game season.
Correct. Fuck 10.
T.T. Tolliver becomes the first man, as we mentioned before, 5,000 receiving yards with two teams. That's an amazing stat. And
one thing that's not on that list, and that's why I'm going to bring it up now, because I think it's cool.
Okay.
He's got over 1,000 career receiving yards playing for Tampa against Orlando and playing for Orlando against Tampa. That, to me, is even more remarkable.
That is pretty. And particularly when you see the list of players that have played on both sides of that series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That stands out.
There are not many players who have 1,000 yards on either side of that series, and he's got them on both sides of that series. Jim, do you know how many guys have had over 1,000 yards in that series? Off top of your head?
Off top of my head, no. I mean, I could hazard guesses, but that's what they would be guessing.
I'm sure Law did it. I'm sure Wagner did it.
Yeah, I would say Law, Wagner.
Stevie Thomas probably did it for Tampa.
Stevie Thomas, maybe. Orlando early on kind of rotated through receivers a little bit.
This would be one of those things that I hope once there is a database, a searchable database, that we'll be able to get these answers on it in an instant.
Yeah. Well, continuing on the list.
Yeah. Now I think in the way the league started off this year, by the way, the game wasn't so good, but this was the way to start off the year. I mean, I think it would have been cool to have it be the Arena Bowl last year. But game one this year, and everybody joked about it because it was on April Fool's Day. But the league played their 3,000th game in league history. That's one hell of an accomplishment, considering of all the troubles that this league has gone through in its 29 seasons.
And considering this list and what the rest of the list will say, I would rank that number one for this list for this season.
I mean, it has played more games than all the other minor league outdoor leagues. What was it? XFL, USFL. Sure, it included the games that were played when Canada was the CFL was in the US. That's just a stunning number, and I guess it just goes to show the resiliency of the Arena Football League, no matter the issues. Is it fair to say, guys? Adam, Jim?
I said, as you continue through this list that we're looking at and you'll be saying, I would put that number one for this season.
Rattlers became the first franchise to reach 275 all-time wins. Rattlers post historic offensive season, first to score 56-plus points in every game in a season.
That's kind of a for convenience stat, because there's actually two teams who have scored 55 points in every game.
Right.
But, it's just
how close that they came to just shattering the game's the average points per game record.
Not even close.
No?
It was under 2 points per game.
They were 20 – they needed 92 points against Cleveland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To I forget whether that was the tying number or the breaking number.
What?
Derrick Ross becomes the first man to reach 3,000 rushing yards in a career.
By the way, he only tied for the league lead in rushing touchdowns. This is the first time we've kind of seen mortality out of Derrick Ross in his career.
Yeah, I know. There were two other good fullbacks this year.
Yeah, Benson and Richardson.
Yeah.
And I thought Rory Nixon had a really good year, too.
Yeah,
he scored so many touchdowns.
Yeah, Jim mentioned that. Jim mentioned that, Mark Lewis becomes the record holder for the most PATs made in a career. I think it's pretty fitting. He misses his last one of the season. Rattlers reached third best mark all time for consecutive home wins.
And again, worth mentioning.
Yeah.
No quarterback has ever gone who's playing in this league has ever gone there and won.
That's a crazy stat. I know you mentioned that earlier. That's a crazy stat.
Hey, look at it this way. Somebody may be able to go to Glendale and win.
Yeah. And Sol break the record for most consecutive quarters with at least one score. And
two consecutive seasons without a zero on the scoreboard. You know how hard that is? No one's ever done it. Let's start there.
Regular season, right? Regular season only?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, regular season.
They've gone 139 quarters in a row without a zero. Think about how many times you only get one possession in a quarter, in a first quarter or a third quarter.
It happens all the time. I mean, this – Adam's on to something there. This is – he was talking about earlier TT's individual stat and that his all-purpose yards and how that might be more significant than other stats.
Right.
This is a pretty significant stat because that is supremely hard to accomplish. The only thing is that doesn't necessarily reflect – wins and losses and championships.
No, but it's another example as to why Dan Rodabaugh is a better quarterback than Tommy Grady.
Yes. Or why Clint Dozell's a good coach and the offensive consistency that they have as well.
Absolutely. No, I mean, no arguments.
They go hand in hand.
No arguments. The what difference is Tommy Grady's coaches can all count to four.
I know you're the one who checked the, was checking the and keeping track of that stat, Adam. What was the closest that they ever came to not? Was it 2 points or 3 points?
Man, no laugh about that? About that, the count to four joke? No? Really? Anyway, ask your question again.
When it how close did Philly come to having that streak snapped?
They scored a touchdown in every single one of those quarters.
Wow.
Now, it wasn't always an offensive touchdown, but they scored a touchdown in every single one of those 139 quarters.
Huh.
So no cheapies with a field goal or a safety or anything.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Now, how many of those times came down to the last couple plays of the quarter? Happened against Tampa this year. They damn near got shut out in the third.
It's a lot of milestones, 29th season. I know we mentioned at the top of the show, we're coming up on the silly season. We're coming up on the postseason. We are going to crown our next champ, and I know everybody's talking about who will be making it, you know, on the when it comes to the national conference, but you know we still got to play the games, still got to talk about the games. Luckily, we have a full slate on TV except for the game, the LA game, LA Cleveland game. We're getting a back to back. I think Jim and I are talking about this. I think it's the first time that we've ever had a back to back game on CBS Sports Network, which is cool. So all of Saturday will be an all CBS Sports Network affair. Starts off on Saturday, Jacksonville. This is it's very similar to last year, right, Adam and Jim? Jacksonville and Orlando are playing in the first round.
and it looks like the exact same game. It really does.
It looks like the game that Orlando should win, and we'll see what happens.
It was Jacksonville.
But do you think
they
are going to win?
It was Jacksonville won by 22, right? I think it was
last
20,
year?
Was it 22 last year? Yeah, 55.
It wasn't fun, I know that.
Yeah, 55-33. Tommy Grady is still the quarterback. Randy Hibbert will not be playing for BMO. BMO won't be playing for Jacksonville.
BMO might be playing for Jacksonville.
Yeah. Sorry, I meant to say Hibbert won't be playing for, that's who started last year for Orlando. The line for this one, at least at right now, guys, Orlando's favored by 4 points. The over under is a 101.5.
That opened at 7.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you see this? I mean, Lancey.
Jacksonville's winning this game. Jacksonville's going to win this game. I don't think this game's going to be close. I think Orlando's going to get killed in this game. I think Orlando's had it. I think they've absolutely shot. You know, I almost said something I shouldn't have said. I got to get back in the whole swing of doing this again. I think they are absolutely they hit their peak. I don't think they were a legitimate 12-win team this year. I think this was legitimately a team that probably should have won about 9 games. And I don't think they're that good. And I still think Jacksonville's got more talent.
If Hibbert would have been there all year, would have been a legitimate 12 wins?
No, I don't think so.
Because I think it would have been more than 12.
I think they would have finished with the exact same record.
Even if it was more than 12, I agree with him. I agree with Adam. I don't think that makes a difference.
Okay, just explain this for anybody who may be asking. How can the team be underachieving at 12 wins? No, I'm just asking.
No.
I'm just asking
the question. They're not underachieving.
Orlando underachieving. It's about Jacksonville underachieving.
Yeah, Jacksonville is ridiculous. This is the same Jacksonville. I could argue this is a more talented Jacksonville team than the Jacksonville team from last year. Now, they have one massive deficiency that last year's team didn't have.
Yeah, Joe Sykes.
Joe Sykes. I mean, they have one massive deficiency. But this offense should not be stopped. And I don't think this offense is going to be stopped in this game.
Games have been very good this year.
Now, I think this game is gonna suck. To tell you the truth, it would not surprise me if either one of these teams won by 20 points over the other one, because I think once it starts to go downhill for one of these teams, it's gonna fall apart.
I would concur with that.
Here's a stat. I don't think it, and again, it doesn't make any difference, but the home team never won in the series this year.
No, they didn't. But Jacksonville probably should have won all three games.
Yeah, it was close.
You remember the game, the screwy game that was on Univision?
Yes.
When Tompkins had the kick return. Again, Brandon Tompkins changing a game, right? Mm-hmm. Brandon mm-hmm. Tompkins won that game in Jacksonville.
Brandon Tompkins won a lot of games this year for Orlando. This is a game, by all purposes, you look at it at face value as a regular fan, you think Orlando should win this game. But like Adam said, Jacksonville has the talent, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. They have the ability to dominate a game like this. Orlando needs to get their pass rush going.
Orlando needs to stop playing bump and run on number two. Yeah. Stop doing that. Because it didn't work to the tune of 15 catches and 8 touchdowns the last time these two teams played in Orlando.
And I don't know, this might seem odd. There seems to be a part of me, Orlando's getting too wrapped up in themselves and Coach Keith and what they're doing. He was making all the right calls, all the right decisions early in the season, midway through the season. Towards the end of the season, I don't know what word to use, tight. I don't think he's.
No, I'll tell you exactly what it is. I'll tell you exactly what it is, Jim, and this is the other point. He does not have as much, and neither does Sock, have as much confidence in BMO that he had in him.
Yeah, okay, no, that very valid, very fair point. That's probably what it is. They don't have the confidence with BMO that they have with Randy Hepburn. Their game call is different the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season.
It's very vanilla.
Than the season. And not only the game call, but the decision making is being affected by it as well. And they're not making I don't think they're making decisions like they should be making decisions like they did early in the year that they were the beneficiaries of. And that's going to hurt them against Jacksonville. And to what extent, I'm not sure.
Now, Adam, is it a vanilla offense because that they never adapted the offense for BMO, or is it just a matter of
adapt it for BMO? If you adapt it for BMO, they get shut down.
Right, exactly. And by the way, another factor here, Greg Carr didn't play last week. Don't know what's wrong with him because I haven't been here. But if he doesn't play, where's Orlando's height coming from? Brackens? Well,
I will tell you this. Greg Reed went down at the end of the game with what looked like a wrist injury.
Did he?
He has been he was not placed on the inactive reserve. But
he was inactive on the thing today.
Yeah, active on practice report. So let's see what happens with Greg Reed.
That changes things too, definitely.
Where's Greg Carr?
Was Greg Carr put on IR? I don't remember.
Give me a second. I'll pull it up.
Yeah, I'm checking there.
But Greg Reed, as short as he is against a tall Greg Carr, he has the ability to nullify him. That's the significance of a Greg Reed. And if you lose a Greg Reed, so that's something to pay attention to.
Carr's on inactive reserve.
He is on inactive reserve, not
but that, but. So that means we have to pay attention to transactions on Friday. Mm-hmm. They have the ability on Friday to activate him.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are two big factors that I did not know about Greg Reed. But, you know, it's just my gut is it's he who makes a mistake first in this game is going to just fall apart. That's my gut. How many times have we seen it with Jacksonville over the course of the last two seasons? When something goes wrong with that team, and we saw it in the Arena Bowl last year, they completely lose it at that point.
Let's hope it's not a kicker thing.
I don't think any of these I know I've said this to a few people. I don't think there could legitimately not be a single close game in this postseason, and it'd be a damn shame.
Yeah, I agree.
But I would not be stunned if there was not one close game in this postseason.
Jim, do you concur with Adam and Jacksonville getting the win?
Yeah, I told people earlier this week I thought Orlando should win. I don't think they will win.
Yeah, I'm thinking the exact same thing.
And that's not a knock. I think the big thing for me is, and we won't know until game day if Greg Reed can go, and we won't know the day before if Greg Carr can go for Orlando. Those are definitely some significant players in this game, and particularly when it comes to matchups. The ability to overcome the early mistake. And I see, that's the heart that's my difficulty in saying Jacksonville.
Right.
They seem to have a hiccup and blah, 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 the world's ending. Something fell on my head. Her earth is crashing down. But they really do have the talent. And the way Orlando ended the season, losing to two games, they don't seem cohesive on how they're approaching. And fortunately for me, none of their coaches have my cell phone number or my contact information. And they won't reach out to me about this.
Well, I don't give a damn. But, let us call. Whatever.
No, I would welcome it because I would love to have that discussion and understand. And because in doing so, I'm able to turn around and talk about it here and enrich everybody that's listening. But yeah, I'm going to go. I agree with Adam. I don't think this is close. I think it goes widespread one way or the other. And I'm leaning more widespread Jacksonville than Orlando.
For the game itself on the broadcast, it's going to be Brent Stover. Color's going to be Shedrick Bonner. And sideline's going to be Arena Tina. Second game of the doubleheader on CBS Sports Network. We still have to talk about it. Portland travels to face the Arizona Rattlers.
I'm taking the 29.5.
Yeah. Yeah, Arizona's favored by 29 points. The over under is 107.5.
I think this is going to be a game that's never in doubt, but I also think this is going to be a game that Portland stays in front of that number, if that makes any sense. Because look, you could be blown out and lose by 26.
Oh, I know.
I've been listening to Adam say this, and I've been telling him I think I'm sold, I think I'm buying. I'm still not sure. The way Arizona massacred Cleveland the last week of the year, and Cleveland is a better team than Portland, I just don't know.
Now, the most points scored ever.
Is there a spread on the, or not a spread, is there an over under on this game?
101.5. Do the math.
Yeah.
Most points ever scored in a playoff game is 89 by the Philadelphia Soul back in 2012.
By the way, Bernard Morris was the quarterback on the other side of that game.
The most points scored by a home team was the same Philadelphia Soul. Where is the one thing I wanted? Least points scored in a playoff game is 6, and I'm just saying that just for you know, conversation's sake. And the the largest victory, 55 points, that same Philadelphia game. Back in 2012, Philadelphia won 89-34 over the Jacksonville Sharks.
BMO.
Largest victory by a home team, same thing, 55 points. Just to be fair, so we can move on to the next games, is there any, because we got to be fair with this, is there any way that this Portland team can play as well as they did in the playoffs the last time that these two teams played?
Underinflated footballs, 12 men on a side, referees showing flags only on Arizona.
Plexiglass for nets.
Timeouts. No.
Plexiglass for nets.
I don't know. No. I think the interesting thing for us to say is what we would do if Portland won the game.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, we got to do something stupid at the Arena Bowl.
Because if Portland won that game, that opens up the opportunity for Jacksonville to host the Arena Bowl.
Does Portland have a mascot? Did they invest in a mascot this year?
Probably not. If they did, it's a big steel hammer.
Let's get the
giant steel pipe.
Do they have last year's mascot outfit floating around?
No, I don't know.
We could probably find that.
If we can find it, or better yet, let's see if we can find like the Storm Man outfit for the Arena Bowl.
Oh, man.
If we find the Storm Man outfit, I will put on the Storm Man outfit of the Arena Bowl.
How the hell are you going to work in that in press row?
With Ed Williams in cryogenics right now because it cannot be brought out.
What is this, the Futurama episode?
Well, look, if some team is listening who's got a mascot outfit who's not going to be at the Arena Bowl this year, I will wear your mascot outfit at the Arena Bowl.
Claw.
All right, that's a bad example. I'm talking about like a fuzzy mascot, not a.
Well, the one in Tampa Bay would do it.
Storm Dog.
Yeah. I should put on the Striker outfit at that point. Yeah. That's what I should do.
Ron, just for giggles, Ron James, by the way, is 2-13 all time versus Arizona.
By the way, I would laugh my ass off. I would seriously laugh my ass off if Portland won. It'd be so fitting. How poetic if the season starts with Portland going to Arizona and getting blitzed by like a billion points. Mm. And then turning around and ending their season. That'd be so hilarious.
But wait, remember, we've seen things happen before. You know, Columbus-Dallas. So,
nowhere near. That Columbus team was competent, at least.
Yeah. For the game, play-by-play is Dave Ryan. Color is going to be Randy Gatewood. Sideline is going to be Cassie McKinney. The last nationally broadcast game is going to be on Saturday. It's going to be on ESPN2. It's going to be the Tampa Bay Storm traveling to play the Philadelphia Soul. At the PPL Center in town, Pennsylvania.
I like it. Good job by the Soul on that. That's like a great problem.
Yeah,
before you get to that, I want to give Randy Gatewood a shout out. He is one of the few national broadcasters that actually participates in the post game, the media vote for post game awards, and I want to give him for doing so. Much appreciated. I think that speaks volumes of who he is and what he does. So to Randy Gatewood, thank you very much.
Game.
Sorry, that's a sidetrack for you guys.
That's okay. Five dimes.
I would give him some props. I don't know if he listens. If he does, thank you, Randy.
Philadelphia is favored by 30. Over under is also at a 101.5.
I think Philly's going to score 80 points in this game.
Yeah,
I'm not so certain it gets to the total when they do.
It's we're talking about before, just like the last game. What would have to happen for Philadelphia to lose?
Tampa Bay. To lose, or are we talking the spread to lose?
No, just to lose. Period.
Tampa's not winning this game.
First off, Philadelphia is going to be without one of their receivers this week. They placed him on McDaniel. They placed him on injured reserve.
They'll slot somebody else in.
So they'll slot in more than likely Lonnie Outlaw. Yeah. Now, Lonnie Outlaw, he matches up favorably against the Tampa Bay Storm defensive backfield because of
I match up favorably against the Tampa Bay Storm defensive backfield.
No, you don't. But his size, they've always had problems with the bigger receivers. So the key for Lonnie is his consistency, and that is one of the reasons he doesn't get as many reps as he could get. They obviously have three stout starters, and they're going to stick with the three stout starters in Philadelphia. But when you have a fourth receiver with the size of Lonnie Outlaw, you find ways to get him in. He hasn't been in there on a consistent basis. So with McDaniel out, he needs to find a consistent game this week. So – Homer hat on. It opens the door slightly. But realistically, I mean, Tampa Bay has not fixed their offensive line problems.
No.
Jason Boltis is beat up outside of.
Do you start somebody else beside Boltis just to give him a shot?
No. Why are you going to throw Warren Smith into this?
Why are you going to make his life miserable?
You ride it with Boltis. At wide receiver, outside T.T. Tolliver, nobody's really been consistent. Appreciate his shown flashes, but he's dropped too many balls. Him and the other receivers, there's a compute. I don't know how
Jim is trying to make this sound better than it really is.
Yeah.
Tampa hasn't scored more than 40 in a single road game this year, and they lost by 33 at Portland. Listen to this. They're road games this year. Okay, you ready? They're road games.
Hold on. I'm answering the question I was asked. What would it take for Tampa Bay to win the game?
Dan Rodabaugh would have to turn up with a serious injury an hour before kickoff.
No. Dan Rodabaugh had a turd of a game two, 3 weeks ago?
And they still won the game.
They barely survived to win the game. And that wasn't his worst game of the season. If he throws it, if he has a game like he did two previous games in the season where he threw three picks, that opens the door. So to answer that particular question specifically,
He had a turd of a game when the two teams played in Philly, and Philly won by 30 when Philly spotted him 2 touchdowns.
Hey, I can only answer the question that's presented in front of me.
Okay. Now, the answer is there is no way that Tampa Bay swung away in this game, because the only fitting way for the Lawrence Samuels era to end is by them getting whooped by like 60. I don't think they're actually going to lose by 60, but I do think Philly's going to score 80, and I do think Tampa is not going to score 40.
The play-by-play is actually, it's not Ari Wolf, actually. It's Joe Beninati, and Shedrick will come over up to Allentown to do color for this game.
I would suggest fans listen to Tampa Bay Storm broadcast. It's going to be highly entertaining.
Yes. Oh, it will definitely
be very entertaining. Yeah. On iHeart.
With Derek Sharp, Ian Beckles.
Yeah. Last game.
No, Jack needs to be – you need to send Jack to this game. We need to make this happen.
Just send Jack some Jack, and then it'll be well worth it.
Jack Harris needs to be at this game.
Last game, it also happens at the same time as the Tampa-Philadelphia game. The LA Kiss's franchise first home, quote unquote, home game, which will be played in San Diego, which will be San Diego's first ever Arena Football League game to be played at the Valley View Casino Center. Cleveland plays the LA Kiss. Is it fair? Considering the 4 games and the matchups, is it fair to say that this will be the second best game of the weekend? And that's
no,
really,
I think this will be the best game of the weekend.
You think so?
I agree. I think this will be the best game.
Five Dimes has LA favored currently by 4 with the over under at 100.5.
Again, another game that opened up at 7, and that tells you all you need to know.
Yeah.
I think Cleveland's going to beat LA handily in this game. I do. I think getting away from it for a week is going to help this Cleveland team a lot. I trust Arvell Nelson more than I trust whomever LA is going to throw out there. Mm-hmm. I trust you know, that the defense that has been really bad for Cleveland over the course of the last several weeks is going to improve in this week, and I think LA is going to try to kind of slug its way through this game and is not going to be able to work. I don't see it working. I think LA is going to have a hard time getting into the 40, into the 50s rather, and I don't think that's going to be enough against Cleveland in this game. I think this is a double digit victory for
both of these. Both of the games this year versus these two teams are absolutely they were great
games. Yes,
they're great games. What is it going to take for Donovan Morgan to extend his career for one more game? I mean, it's
now I got a lot better argument for LA winning this game than I do for, you know, Tampa winning. I could listen to arguments about any of Jacksonville, Orlando, LA, or Cleveland advancing.
I agree with Adam. I think Cleveland wins this game. I think it's going to be a detriment for LA having a home game away. I think that's going to take something against their psyche.
Don't forget they have a short week too, with basically with 2 days of travel.
Yeah. So they've got that working against them as well. Cleveland's coming back. They're going to week off refreshed.
That's true.
I agree with Adam. I think that Cleveland is going to have the ability to correct some things. They're going to come in there, and I don't know if it's a 2-score game, but I do think Cleveland wins this game.
Okay. I want to ask you a question, because you say it's a detriment to have a game on the road. What about Philadelphia? Their game is technically it's not at home either.
Philly's been doing this all year, though.
In front of me, and we kind of dove off of it. I don't think it's a benefit for Philadelphia. I think it was a benefit for the Storm, but is it that much a great benefit to help the Storm win?
You play that game on the moon, and it won't help the Storm win.
That's not good for Philly. It's not fun. You're hosting a game and you got to get on a bus and travel. No.
But they've been doing it all year. LA, number one, had an extra home game this year as it was.
Yeah.
And I might say,
what did Portland do the next time they played them at home? They beat them.
I'm not arguing with that. I agree. And I'm saying that the greater benefit goes to Cleveland in this situation. But I think, if we're going to say, is there some type of benefit? Yeah, I think that Storm gained a benefit. I don't know if it's much to be gained at all in the grand scheme of things. Mm-hmm. But looking over to the LA-Cleveland game, I think this is big because that's not your home field. That's not your home locker room. That's not how you walk into the arena. That's not where you go sit down and have your team meal.
Not even the same color as your field.
Yeah.
No, I think they're bringing their field.
They're bringing that field.
If Philly can bring theirs, which they have done to all these home away from home games.
God bless them. How big is this arena, by the way?
This is the old San Diego Arena.
That doesn't tell me anything.
Let me look it up.
Is this like a real like NBA NHL?
Yeah.
Venue, or is this just?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
is,
yeah, yeah. The
this
old,
is,
the
so
old
this
San
is
Diego,
Dallas,
the old San Diego Clippers used to play there, if I remember correctly.
Okay. You can call Andy Lapuznak and ask him about the San Diego Riptide.
God, I know.
Yeah, the Riptide played there. That is correct. The Riptide played there.
The first quarterback of the San Diego Riptide was?
Oh.
No?
No?
Bueller?
Bueller? I don't know.
Craig Wheelahan.
Wow.
How's that for a name from the past?
Holy crap. Was it Valley View Casino Center?
It
holds 16,000.
Okay.
I think the biggest thing for me in this game is you saw Los Angeles make a lot of roster changes prior to playing Portland.
Yes, they did.
And they took a bad loss.
Yeah.
And I concur with Adam. They didn't have much to play for in that game, but still, it's a game you play and you play to win. And they took a bad loss and it didn't work out for them. I don't think that bodes well moving into this week against Cleveland.
You remember the
it's a much better team,
Jim? You remember that Tampa Orlando game that meant nothing back in what was it 2010? Was it 10?
Orlando won, right? That's the Bobby Scipio fight in the stands,
right? Okay, I was thinking that had a negative effect on Tampa too. Obviously, it didn't. They went to the Arena Bowl, but yeah, Orlando went on to beat Jacksonville the next week because they used that momentum from playing a game that they really didn't have to play.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the New York Giants back when they played against the Patriots in week 6. Week 17 and played their hearts out against them and ended up beating them in the Super Bowl, the 18-1 Patriots.
That's right. That's right.
So never mind. That point holds no. Portland is not beating.
But yeah, but looking at everything, yeah, I concur with a lot of the stuff that both you guys said at Cleveland. I think Cleveland will. They've been able to. They have the rest. Yeah, I mean, it's been a rough year being on the road for them, but something about Coach Tun, man. Tun will get them. Will get them going, and I think.
He can dial up the offense. You give him some time, he can dial it up. And, you know,
offense hasn't been the problem lately. It's really been the defense that's been the problem.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. I think this game's going to come down to Selesky and how he gets the calls on defense. And, you know, if the defense performs like they can, you know, even if Selesky gets the right calls in, defense still has to perform. And, you know, with this week off, it gives them some time to come over bumps and bruises and get healthy and find a way to come over Burkowski being put on IR. So I think it bodes well.
Yeah, it should be good. I wish they were all four games are going to be good. Let's hope that they are. But just by looking at the matchups and how the lines are this week, it's really telling on which games we should really center on. But hey, you know what? We got three of the four games on national TV this week. Hopefully, if you have both the CBS Sports Network and you have ESPN, you're able to watch them. But again, it's nothing like – you got to admit, guys, the amount of time that you've been around the Arena Football, there is nothing like playoff football, right? No matter what the matchups are.
Playoff hockey?
Playoff hot, well.
you get this right. There's nothing like playoff hockey.
Okay.
There's a different mental attitude having been around a hockey team for a long time.
Yeah.
Playoff hockey is significantly different. That's not the takeaway.
Yeah, well, one game versus seven. One game versus seven, though.
But the way you have to change your focus, it's a completely different animal and different beast. It really is. Or at least for my money, it is.
Right. Now, we have to talk about it before we finish up, because I know we're going to mention it slightly. We mentioned it a little bit before. Where in the annals of Arena League football, of Arena Football League history, will people remember Donovan Morgan? You know, this could very easily be his very last game in AFL history. How will people remember him?
I think Donovan Morgan will be remembered as a really good wide receiver, and I don't think it'll be any more than that. Tell you the truth, for my money, he's not a Hall of Famer. I think he's going to end up being a Hall of Famer, but for my money, he's not. He never transformed a team, right? Like, I think this is his first playoff game, if I'm not mistaken. Always been a really good receiver.
It's not his first playoff game.
It's not his first playoff game?
No.
Has he won a playoff game before?
Nah, well, now that's an entirely different question. I don't know the answer.
Oh, 08 in Chicago, okay. Oh, yeah, you know what? He played on those Philly teams, too. He played in an arena.
In Tulsa in 2010.
Oh, yeah, he played in Tulsa, too. All right, fair enough. You know what? 290 touchdowns. He probably. I mean, yeah. I retract that about him not being a Hall of Famer.
I would say he is going to be remembered as one of the all-time better receivers in the Arena Football League. And it's going to depend.
Top 10 receiver?
I think we can make arguments. And I think if he played longer, his story may change. I think he has – if he played three more years, I think he could be as productive as he was this year. And that may change his story.
Agreed. I think part of the story of Donovan Morgan's stats, though, to me, are he played in five 18-game seasons.
Yeah. So you got to look at
– yeah, his best season was 2015.
You can't get season stats. You have to look more like per game or just career. But the one thing I'm always going to remember is how dominant he was in the red zone. I think that our friend out in Arizona is much better in the red zone. But he has these big mitts, these big paws. And just – I remember a playoff game in 2010, Tulsa Talons, Tampa Bay Storm, in which – he had six catches for, I don't know, it was like 54 yards. Doesn't seem impressive. But four of those went for touchdowns. And he was totally covered on all but one of them. Mm-hmm. And he just snatched that ball and just thinking to myself, like, why are they not going to him more often? If they went to him more often, they'd be in this game. it wouldn't be a blowout. And I don't know. I have to think about where he actually sits in the grand scheme of things, to be honest. But
900 receptions, over 12,000 yards receiving, 290 touchdowns, best year wide receiving yards was 2015, where he had over 2,000. Best year for touchdowns was his 2010 season with Tulsa. That's the first and only time that he broke 50.
I think for Donovan, the reason someone like Adam and I paused for a second,
yeah,
is he didn't have the breakaway speed. He didn't have the huge jump ability. He didn't have that circus. You didn't see him make tons of circus catches, but what you did see him make is he ran a great route. He saw a ball come in a tight window, and he put his hands up and he caught the ball. So he snatched the ball out of the air.
A finesse receiver?
No, I would not say finesse.
He's a power receiver.
Power?
Yes, not finesse at all. No, his hands. Chris Carter.
Yeah,
that's what I think.
Good comparison.
That's actually
very good.
Chris Carter. That's what I think of. That would be his NFL equivalent.
Who would? And what last question about him? Who will he be remembered? Which team will he be remembered the most for playing for? Chicago, Tulsa, Philly, New Orleans, or LA?
LA. He's the
yeah.
And the reason is he's the face of their franchise and will be for at least two or three more seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure. Despite his retirement, they're going to find some way to keep him involved, and that's going to solidify what all three of us just said, that it's LA.
Yeah. Okay.
Although I think he made a great impact his rookie season. I think where he really came to fruition is he did play in 2009 when there was no AFL season, but in 2010 in Tulsa, he made the Tulsa Talons. They reached the playoffs because of him. Their quarterback, everyone touted as one of the
Justin
top
All Bad.
Yep, Justin All Good. That's his name. And once Donovan left, he became Justin All Bad.
Nice.
He made that quarterback. So
nice.
I got to think where he fits in the grand scheme of things, but he's up there. He's definitely way up there.
Well, he'll be missed. I mean, he dynamic player. He seems to be. I hope they. I know the game's not going to be on TV, but I hope they do something nice for him at halftime for one of the televised shows. But I would think so.
I'm going to wager he gets second team All Arena honors.
He'll be. I think either way, he'll get an All Arena.
I don't think he is first team. There's no way. But I definitely, unless a lot of the people voting give like a parting gift. You said you're retiring, mm-hmm. which shouldn't be a part of the process, but nevertheless might be. Legitimately, I think he's second team.
Okay. Well, it was great having both you on this week.
We're not going to make Arena Bowl picks? Are we all picking Arizona?
We will. I just wanted to say, considering that, it's the longest show of the year. We're coming up on 2 hours, but, I don't care. This is talk about the playoffs and getting two great guys talking about arena football. That's what I love. And I appreciate both you and for being with me this week. And, Jim with you for the season. We got a lot more playoffs. But last thing before we do go, we have to choose our playoff, our Arena Bowl picks. I'm going to go with
– last.
You're going to pass?
I said I'll go last.
Oh, you'll go last? Okay, well, I will go first. I'm going to say it'll be Arizona, and I don't see why I can't pick Philly. To me, I just can't. So to me, it's gonna be a rematch. It'll be Arizona and Philly. Adam?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think the themes we're going to see in this playoffs is I think we're going to see the good team. The really when I say the good teams, I mean Arizona and Philly are going to play the role of good teams. It's not the sexiest pick on the face of the earth by any stretch of the imagination, but Arizona, again, said it at least twice on this show already, they've never lost at home to a quarterback in this league, and they haven't lost to a team in this league but once since 2005, who's currently in this league. Mm-hmm. And as long as that keeps up, I don't see Cleveland stopping them, I don't see LA stopping them, I sure as hell don't see Portland stopping them, and there's something about when Philly runs into this Arizona team that the results just aren't very good.
No.
I don't think there's going to be one game in this playoffs that are decided by fewer than 10 points, and I think Arizona is going to win all of them. I think when this is said and done, we are going to look back at this as the most dominant postseason that a team has ever had. I think they are going to whoop up on all three of these teams they're going to play against. And I think they will get vengeance for last year and what they conveniently call the Stockton screw job. Mm-hmm. And will further solidify the fact that they are going to be the greatest dominant franchise and dynasty in Arena Football League history.
Jim?
Arena Bowl, Arizona, Philadelphia. I agree with most of what you guys said. There's not much more to add to that. I do think there will be at least one first round game under 10 points. Not that that's saying much, but, unless something really wacky happens, to be honest, I don't care about LA and Cleveland because neither of those teams are getting past Arizona. And whether one of those teams wins by 20 points or 1 point, they're not getting by Arizona. So that's nothing to me. The interesting thing to me is the Jacksonville-Orlando game. And that team, we're assuming, rightfully so, Philly beats Tampa. That winner will then go up to Philly. And I don't think Philly has any issues with Orlando whatsoever. Jacksonville, though, could get interesting. And,
agreed. Totally agreed.
And so as we're talking these paths, I think that's something to look forward to. I still think it's Philly, and I still think Philly goes out to Arizona. And I would expect that matchup to be an Arizona victory. That's not to say Philly can't do it. They absolutely can. We have more shows to make those arguments, and I'll wait till then to do so. But, yeah, if I have to call it now, Arizona or Philly.
By the way, just quick thing before we go. The last time that the Portland franchise in Arizona met was back in 2014. The final score was a 52-48 on a last-second touchdown by Arizona. But I agree. I don't think, it won't be close. So, Adam, I will most – if you do join us again on the show, I know we'll be at Arena Bowl. Jim, I will speak to you next week. But, Adam, thanks for joining us. It was great to have you on again.
I'll be back at the Arena Bowl.
There you go. Jim, I will speak to you next week.
Yes, sir.
All right. So for everybody here at AFL tonight, for Jim Robinson, for Adam Markowitz, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.
Deuces.